So last week we started speaking about the Tfila of Aleinu. So the plan today is to do part two of the Shir on Aleinu. Let me just summarize some of the things we spoke about last week, and then we can build on them this week. Aleinu is a very, very strong statement about our pride in being Jewish, our utter rejection of idolatry, of any form of Avodah Zarah whatsoever, and our clear statement that we're privileged, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us and distinguished us from the rest of the nations of the earth. It's tremendous, tremendous pride in being the Am HaNivchar and being the chosen people. Specifically, says Aleinu, they all bow down to emptiness and to idolatry, to things that are empty and nothingness. They pray to a God who will not save them. We, in contrast, bow down, we prostrate ourselves before the Melech Malkei Hamlochim, the King of Kings, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. They follow idolatry, but we embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. We saw that there's an old tradition that the Tfila of Aleinu was written by Yehoshua ben Nun when he came into Eretz Yisrael. And we said that, you know, when you think about the content of Aleinu, you can understand why Yehoshua would be credited with the authorship of Aleinu. The Jews coming into Eretz Yisrael were faced for the first time with first time in 40 years at least, they were faced with a foreign culture, with idols that they encountered at every turn, nations that were very much not dedicated to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it was very important for the Jews at that time to make a strong statement. They do their thing, but we do our thing. You know, we are not, you know, engaged in any way with the idolatry of the outside world. We also mentioned last week the comments of the Bach, with the old circus of Krakow of the 1500s, and his commentary by Bais Chadash, the Bach, his commentary to the tour. The Bach writes that although really Aleinu originally was part of the Musaf davening on Rosh Hashanah, and that's the only place where Aleinu was really part of the tefillos, at some point Aleinu was transferred to be the end of davening, to be something that we say at the end of our various tefillos, because at the end of our various tefillos we're about ready to leave shul or to leave the comfort of our davening zone, wherever that happens to be. And more often than not, we're ready to go into the big wide world out there, and we're going to encounter a lot of, a lot of different ideologies, a lot of different people, a lot of different kinds of religions. And it's very, very easy, once we're out of the security of our davening zone, whether it's a Beth Medrash or a shul or a dining room, you know, whatever it happens to be that we're davening, it's easy to get out there and be swept away by ideologies that are very opposed to Yiddishkeit, to the belief in one God. That's why Aleinu is the last thing, or one of the last things we say just before we're about to finish the davening, so that as we go out there, as we make that transition to the outside world, we're fortified and we're strengthened to know the difference between us and them. As we spoke about last song, we spoke about different customs as to whether Aleinu is at the end of every tefillah, or maybe Aleinu is just recited when we're about to leave the shul. So if we do Shacharis Musaf back to back, or even we quoted the Dominican Groyers, if they do Minchon Kabbalah Shabbos back to back, you know, so Aleinu was only recited at the end of the second tefillah, before we're ready to leave shul, as opposed to being recited at the end of the first tefillah as well. What I wanted to try to do today is to focus on the second half of the first paragraph of Aleinu, the part that begins Shehuna Teshonayim, and to focus on the second paragraph of Aleinu, Alkei Nikave, which we'll see takes both of these paragraphs take the ideas of Aleinu in a somewhat different direction. So first of all, Shehuna Teshonayim, we describe ourselves as bowing down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And who is this God to whom we bow? Shehuna Teshonayim V'Yoseh Aretz. God stretches out the heavens and makes a firm foundation for the earth. Umoshav Yekaro V'Shonayim Mimal. The dwelling place of His glory is in the heavens above. Ushchinas Uzal V'Gavhei Meromim. And the full power of His Shechina, of His divine presence, is the Govhei Meromim is in the highest places up in heaven. What seems to be implied by that, by that sentence, is that it's important for us to appreciate how awesome and incredible HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. He's up in the Shamayim, he's up in the heavens, again, a place where he's able to control everything that's down here on earth. And it's interesting, the phrase used is Shechinas Uzo Begavhei Meromim, God's Shechina is up in the high heavens. That's interesting. We oftentimes speak about the Shechina being down here among us. If anything, you know, the reference to the Shechina being in heaven is a very different way of referring to the Shechina than we normally do. So it's important to point out the Mefarshim. I'm thinking particularly of commentary or HaChaim HaKadosh makes his commentary on Chumash. Mefarshim point out that there are different levels of what we call the Shechina. You know, the Shechina is not God Himself. The Shechina is the degree to which we perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, on the one hand, Chazal say that the Shechina never left the Beis HaMikdash even when it was destroyed. On the other hand, they also say that when the Jews went into Galus, so the Shechina went with them. So I don't get it. So where is the Shechina? Is the Shechina sitting there on the Har Abayis somewhere, or is the Shechina with us in Galus? The answer is that that's not really a question. You know, it's not like there's a Shechina which, you know, is found in a particular place. Any time we have a strong sense of God's presence, that's called the Shechina. So if we go to the Beis, you know, the area of the Beis HaMikdash today, the Har Abayis, again, I'm not getting involved into the discussion as to whether you should go to the Har Abayis or not, but theoretically, if we were to go to the Har Abayis, so you would feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's called, but the Shechina never left the Har Abayis. And, you know, in our shuls and Batei Medrash and Chutz La'aretz, we also feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's also called the Shechina. It's not that the Shechina is limited to one particular place. And the Shechina we also feel in different degrees of intensity. There's a certain Shechina that we feel inside a shul, inside a Beis Medrash. There's a certain Shechina that we feel in the Har Abayis. So, Shechinas Uzo, the Govhei Meromim, I think just simply means the ultimate sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu we would feel if we were to be transported to the heavens, meaning we would feel and appreciate God's power in the greatest sense if we were there. Hu Elokeinu Einod, He is our God, there is no other, and that's Malkeinu Esed Eloso, He is in truth our King, there is nothing else besides Him. Hakusufasar Aso, as it says in his Torah, quote unquote, Yodata Hayom HaShivosar Levavecha, you should know today, and you should place upon your heart, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim Bashamayim Mimal, Yahu Aretz Mitachas, that Hashem is God in the heavens above and on the earth below, Ein Od, there is no one else besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Clearly the connection of these lines to the earlier part of Aleinu is as follows. We started off Aleinu by saying, you know, the other nations bow down to all kinds of idols and all kinds of foreign gods. We only bow down to Hashem. Part of why we only bow down to Hashem is because we recognize that ultimately there is no other force in the entire universe that can compete with the Ribono Shel Olam, and that everything that happens in the world ultimately is controlled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the nations of the world may bow down to a sun god, a moon god, a rain god, you know, whatever it happens to be. We recognize the silliness of that because ultimately everything, the rain, the sun, the moon, ultimately everything is under the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the repetition, Ein Od, Hu Elokeinu Ein Od, there is none other besides Him, there's nothing besides Him. And then when we quote the pasuk from Chumash, again, Ein Od, there is nothing else besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the truth is, this is an important thing to think about, even in our own day and age, when, you know, the number of people who are actually worshipping idols in the literal sense of the term are few and far between in our experience. That's not to say they don't exist. I mean, I'm told, I was never in the Far East, but I'm told if you go to the Far East, you know, and it's not uncommon to have, you know, statues and idols which are objects of veneration and even worship, After the cop, I was told that the standard procedure in the Far East, when people go into a restaurant, they typically, not kosher restaurant, when people go into a restaurant, they have a little idol, you know. What's that?
In the Jewish restaurant, many people don't know that.
Yeah.
They also go
in
there.
I'll talk to the mashgiach about that. You know, I mean, food drinking kosher, but if they have a hot dog there, it's probably not a good thing. But, I heard more than that. I heard in the Far East, again, not in kosher restaurants, but, you know, it's very, very standard that in a regular restaurant, you know, where businessmen would go or the like, they'll have a little idol or a figurine, and it's normal when you come into the restaurant to put down something for the figurine as a kind of offering before you go and sit down at your table. Some people leave tips, right? Other people, you know, tip the idol on the way in. Okay, so, yeah, okay, so that's a different culture. But again, in that culture, apparently, you know, a lot of what we would call it, you know, really just like baseline of Avodah Zarah, apparently is still alive and well. But, you know, in Western culture, we don't encounter pure Avodah Zarah in quite the same way that certainly Yehoshua ben Nun did when he came into Eretz Yisrael. But these words of Ein Od, they're still very, very important and very contemporary for us to think about. Because the truth is, any time we attribute things in life to forces other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or imply that God isn't running the show in some way or another, on some level we're guilty of a form of Avodah Zarah. In other words, what Shehuna Tesh Shammai wants to instill in us is the sense that when we look at the world and we look at things that are happening in the world, we should endeavor to see the Yad Hashem, the hand of God, behind all of the occurrences that are taking place in the world. That's just as relevant today, you know, even though, you know, idols are not as ubiquitous nowadays, but, you know, losing sight of the fact that Hashem runs the world is unfortunately an issue which is still a very, very live issue, you know, even today. The last paragraph of Olenu switches gears in a very, very profound way, and we'll take a few moments to go through it. Hakeinu kavelecha Hashem Elokeinu. Hakeinu means therefore. Therefore, meaning as a logical consequence of everything we just spoke about, we are waiting and hoping for you, Hashem, liros v'hirah b'tiferes u'zecha, to see very quickly in the full revelation of the splendor of your power. Tiferes u'zecha, tiferes the splendor. We're looking forward to seeing the splendor of your power. And how will we see the splendor of your power? That one day you, Hashem, are going to cause idols to be removed from the land. And idols, foreign gods, are going to be cut off. We look forward to that day where you will fix up the world under the kingdom of Shakai, another name for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On that day, all mankind, all people of flesh, will call upon your name, and you will cause all of the Rishayim, all of the evil people in the world, to turn towards you. At that time, all of the inhabitants of the world will recognize and they will know that every knee will bend to you, and every tongue will swear by you as opposed to swearing by foreign gods. Before you, Hashem, they will bend their knees and they will fall. And in other words, they will prostrate themselves. And they will give honor to your honorable name. They will accept upon them the yoke of your kingdom, and very speedily you will reign over them forever and ever. because kingship belongs to you, Hashem. And forever and ever you will reign with honor and with glory. As it says in your Torah, at the end of the Shirat Hayom, at the end of the Oz Yashir, Hashem will reign forever and ever. The Ne'emar, and it also says, the Pasuk in Zechariah, V'hoya Hashem l'malach al kol ha'aretz, Hashem will be the king over the entire land. V'yom ahu yi Hashem echad u'shmo echad, on that day Hashem will be one, and his name will be one. This paragraph looks forward to the future of Yemot HaMashiach, looks forward to a messianic future, where basically all of the non-Jews who right now bow down to idols and all kinds of other gods, the day will come where the non-Jewish world as well will recognize the glory of Hashem, and they will embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the one and only God. Meaning, this paragraph, in many ways, it's not a full contrast, but in many ways, it's contrasts somewhat with the first paragraph. The first paragraph, Oleinu L'Shadeach, is all about how only the Jews recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The non-Jews don't. Comes the second paragraph of Al-Kei Nekava and basically says, yes, right now only Jews recognize Hashem and the non-Jews don't, but there will come a day where everybody is going to recognize Hashem, where the non-Jews as well will acknowledge that Hashem is the only God, and we are dreaming and hoping that that day will come very soon. So there are a number of things that I think is just striking in this paragraph, and we'll just try to talk about them a little bit. First of all, the paragraph of Al-Kei Nekava describes how the non-Jewish world will be educated to accept a belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no reference in the paragraph to HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishing or destroying people who worship idols. There are references in Tanakh to that idea, right? That how is HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to get the whole world to worship him? Well, he'll come along and he'll zap, he'll demolish, large groups of people who are worshiping idols, and the only ones that are going to be left are going to be the ones worshiping Hashem. We don't get that impression at all from the paragraph Al-Kei Nekava. If anything, what happens to the Rishayim? This one reference to Rishayim, right? It says, "Lahafnos Eilecha kol Rishay Oretz." All of the Rishayim, all of those who bow down to idols, will be turned towards you. The impression seems, the implication seems to be, the Rishayim, those people are still going to be there. They're just going to go from being Rishayim to being Tzadikim. They're going to be turned towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's reminiscent of the famous story which is told in the Gemara. If you know the story, it's famous. If you don't know the story, you'll know it in a couple of minutes, and then it'll be famous. Right? So the Gemara tells the famous story of the Tanna Rebbe Meir, who was very bothered by the existence of some Rishayim, some evil people in his neighborhood. And he wanted to daven that they die. That the best way to stop them from being Rishayim is for them to die. So he went and consulted with he ended up speaking to his wife, Bruria. Bruria, of course, was the daughter of Yechanim ben Travia, a daughter of a famous Tana, and as we know from the Gemara, is a very, very learned woman in her own right. So Bruria said to her husband, Renea, I don't understand. You shouldn't daven that the Rishayim should die. You should daven that the Rishayim should tshuva. That would be the best possible outcome to the whole scenario. Who wants them, we don't want them committing sins, but, if they could do tshuva and become good people, become tzaddikim, that would be the optimum outcome. And Bruria based this position on a pasuk which many of us said on Rosh Chodesh not so long ago. Yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz, Rishayim odeinam. Right? So, what does that mean? So, Bruria said to Rebbe Meir, Yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz means let the sins disappear from the land. It doesn't say chotim, it doesn't say let the sinners disappear from the land. It says let the sins disappear from the land. In other words, let the evildoers do tshuva, Rishayim odeinam. And then there won't be any Rishonim anymore. Why? Not because Rishonim are going to die, but because Rishonim are going to do tshuva, so they won't be Rishonim. They'll, you know, they'll change, they'll turn in their driver's licenses, you know, at the bottom where previously on the driver's license it had said Rasha. They'll cross it out, they'll check out the box that says Tzaddik. You know, I think it's a course you can take to, you know, get the right box checked off on the driver's license. So everything's going to be wonderful. These people are still going to be alive, and they'll just be considered to be tzaddikim. So Brewery said that to Rav Meir said, oh, that's a good idea. You know, I'll daven that they'll do tshuva. Thank you very much. And that's exactly what happened, says the Gemara. Daven, they did tshuva, and all was well with the world. That perspective of Bruria is really right here in Alkeinu Kaveh. L'hachnos se'lechol kol rishay oras. We're not davening that the Rishayim die. You know, the idols should be swept away. But the people who worship the idols, the ideal is that they should be turned around to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. So that's one point which, you know, emerges from Alkeinu Kaveh. Where should they worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So this also is not explicit in Alkeinu Kaveh, but it's certainly there if you read between the lines. Right? When it says, L'fonecho Hashem Elokeinu yichru'u v'yipolu, right? All of these non-Jews are going to come, and before you, Hashem, they will bend their knee and they will fall. So what does that mean? So we saw before in the first part of Aleinu last week that the whole idea, anachdu karim u'mishtachavim u'modim, is a reference specifically to serving Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash. In the Beit HaMikdash, they would prostrate themselves when they did the avoda, when they did the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a reference to the non-Jewish nations of the world serving Hashem by bending their knees and falling down, again, prostrating themselves, would seem to be a reference to the idea that they will come to the Beit HaMikdash. And indeed, if you look in Tanakh, from the very building of the Beit HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech says that he intended it to be a place where the non-Jews would come and recognize and worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. We know in Halacha, there's a whole concept of a karbon, which is sent to the Beit HaMikdash by a non-Jew. I mean, this was apparently not unusual during the time that the Beit HaMikdash stood, that non-Jews would send karbonos to the Beit HaMikdash. We know the famous story that, you know, such an incident actually played a role in the discussion of the second Beit HaMikdash, when the emperor sent a karbon to the Beit HaMikdash. And, you know, again, Bakhamsa intercepted it, put a blemish in the carbon, you know, that whole story. But I mean, the assumption behind that whole story is that a non-Jewish emperor would be sending a carbon to the Beit HaMikdash, and nobody thought twice about that. That was a normal thing for the Beit HaMikdash. That was a normal thing for the non-Jewish emperor, you know, to be sending a carbon to the Beit HaMikdash. So the day is going to come where everyone, you know, Jew and non-Jew alike, is going to participate in sending korbanos to the Beit HaMikdash and bowing down in the Beit HaMikdash. Again, a non-Jew can only go so far into the Beit HaMikdash, but wherever they're able to go, you know, they will worship there and they will prostrate themselves there. So that idea that the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash is going to include on some level the non-Jewish world is mentioned here in Alkeinu Kaveh as well. Yeah. So that's interesting. It's not, maybe they will. It's a little unclear in Alkeinu Kaveh, you know, as to what exactly these non-Jews are doing. They're certainly rejecting idolatry. They're certainly embracing the idea of one God. Are they going the extra step and also becoming Jewish? Not 100% clear. And the truth is, it's not even clear in the psukim and Tanakh, you know, the various psukim that talk about what's going to be in the end of days. So, again, you know, Yeshaya says, Ki beisi beis tefila yikarei l'chol ha'amim. You know, my Beit HaMikdash is going to be a house of prayer for all of the nations. Okay, in what capacity? Are they going to come and daven there as Jews? Are they going to come and daven there as non-Jews? Again, it's not really clear in the psukim which way it's going to go. And I think if you look at Rishonim as well, there seem to be different opinions as to whether, you know, the dream that we have of the end of days, of the Achris Hayamim, is everyone's going to become Jewish or everyone's going to become monotheistic, right? And there was a belief in one God. What's that?
The Torah does not form the nations become Jews. There are two parts. Being Jewish has the concept of the laws of Torah.
Right.
And believing in Hashem is not.
Right. No, but that's the question. Are they going to go the extra step and be Mekabel Tayyar Mitzvahs? Again, from our paragraph here, Al Kenekabel, it could go either way. It's not clear, you know, what the expectation is. But one thing for sure we know, they're certainly going to believe in one God. They're going to reject any limb. They're going to reject any kind of idols. And, you know, they're going to reject Avodah Zarah.
What about the evangelicals?
Well, they'll definitely reject any kind of son, cousin, dentist, or any other relation to God. You know, they're going to reject, you know, Yashka. They will come to believe as well that there's only one God. You know, God doesn't have a body, and, you know, and they will come to that. Right now, the truth is, the evangelicals, by and large, are some of our biggest friends in the Christian world. But again, because of their support of Israel, their hashkafos still need to undergo some changes, you know, which will happen when Mashiach comes as Hashem. But the truth is, you know, just in terms of being friends to the Jewish people, friends to Israel, they right now they're very good to us. Right now they're very, very good to us. You know, it's good to be Machi Tov, and in the end of days they'll recognize that God is one. You know, Bayom Ahu Yashem HaKadosh Malachah, right? In other words, they recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one. There's an interesting little debate in Halacha as to where Aleinu ends. Right? So, what do you mean, where does Aleinu end? The Ne'emar V'hoi Yashem Malachah Kol Ha'aretz Bayom Ahu Yashem HaKadosh Malachah, right? That's where it ends. It even has a tune, you know, that that you can sing. Bayomahu, Bayomahu, you know, it's so the truth is this last pasuk was added to Alkei Nekava by the Arizal. The Arizal, Rav Yitzchak Luria, the great Mekubal of the 1500s, was insistent that this last phrase, the Ne'emar V'hoi Hashem Malcha Kol Ha'aretz, Bayomahu Yashem Echadosh Parashat, should be added to the end of Aleinu. It's not clear that that's actually the original end of Aleinu. The Vilna Gaon was opposed to that addition. And according to the Vilna Gaon, the end of Aleinu is HaKasu V'Sarasecha Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, period. Right? Now, that is the end of Aleinu, where it talks about Hashem reigning forever and ever. Right? So the addition of the Arizal certainly is far more popular. I think even the lawyers, if I'm not mistaken, they added Ne'emar V'hoi Hashem Melech Al Kol Ha'aretz. You know, it's one of the few things that that lawyers does that actually works with the Arizal. Usually the Arizal and lawyers are not exactly working with the same approach, but here the Ne'emar has become very universally accepted. But again, the Vilna Gaon did not hold that was the end of Aleinu. He held Aleinu ended Kakasu B'Sarasech Hashem Melech Le'olam Vo'ed. And the idea that Bayomahu Yashem Echad Ishma Echad, that God will be one and His name will be one, is an important idea, but not an idea which is really connected to Aleinu. So it's interesting. So the Gemara Mesachim says, what does it mean, Vayomahu Yi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, that God will be one and His name will be one? So the Gemara says, in our day and age, when we hear good things, we make a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Atov HaMeitiv. When we hear bad things, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem Dayan HaEmes. In the future, Yi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, we're only going to make Baruch Atah HaMeitiv on everything. Meaning, you know, right now, we think of the world as being, you know, there are good times and there are bad times. When Mashiach comes, we'll have an understanding that everything, right, everything, what we call good and what we call bad, you know, really... Right, it's for the good. So we will have that recognition. That's Bayomahu Yashem Echad, Ushmo Echad, on that day. I just want to comment also one more thing over here in Alkei Nekaza. We have a phrase with Sakena Lava Malchus Shakai, that the world will be corrected in the kingdom of Shakai. Shakai, of course, is one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's a name that we don't use an awful lot, right, relatively speaking. I mean, Rebbe Heffler mentioned Hashem has many names. We're much more likely to use the name Yudkei Vavkei, Adokai, you know, Elohim. So why doesn't it say the Sakein Olam v'Malchus Yudkei Vavkei? Now, why, where did the name Shakai, you know, come from, you know, all of a sudden over here, right? So where did that come from? So the Mepharshim offer up different explanations. There's some who even say that the uses of Shakai was put into Aleinu to avoid censorship, that no one should, you know, Shakai is not obviously a name of God. If you put Yudkei Vavkei, there was a fear that the censors would take it out. Shakai, you know, it's not as obvious a name of Hashem. But I was thinking as follows, again, I didn't see this in the question, but maybe we can suggest this. We know Shakai is associated in particular with mitzvahs that surround us all the time. We just had in the last week's parasha, Melech Lecha, Hashem, you know, comes to Avraham Avinu and tells him that he has to undergo Bris Milah. And before he says, before he gives him the mitzvah Bris Milah, Hashem says to Avraham, Ani kel Shakai, Yisalech lefonai ve'yitzvamim. I am Shakai, walk before me and be perfect. And how do you become perfect? By having a Bris Milah. We also know that the Shem Shakai is associated with mezuzos. That we write the Shem Shakai on the outside of the cloth of a mezuzah. The common denominator between mezuzah and milah and bris milah is that they engender a sense of the presence of God wherever we are. Right? Again, a mezuzah reminds us that Hashem is not just in the yeshiva and the Beis Medrash and the shul, but He's in each and every one of our homes. He's Shomer Dalsos Yisrael. That's they say that Shin Dalid Yud Shakai is Rosh Tevos. It's an acronym for God who watches over the doors of Israel, Shomer Dalsos Yisrael. And for men who have a Bris Milah, the Bris Milah is a constant reminder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us all the time, you know, wherever we go. That name Shakai has a connotation of being conscious of God at all times. Maybe that's why the term is used over here, L'Shakein Olam Malchus Shakai. The day will come where not only will the nations recognize God in a kind of, you know, vague sense, but they'll have that same sense of the ever-presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that right now we try to cultivate. Well, I'll just end up with the following. You know, one of the things that is striking, you talk to people who convert from Christianity to Judaism, one of the things that's always very striking is that they'll usually say something like this, you know, when I was a Christian, being religious meant you went to church Sunday morning, and then you're free. Right? You're free till the next Sunday morning. Right? You don't have to do anything religious till then. And, you know, in becoming Jewish, I'm struck by the fact that, you know, the sense of God is something that's with you all the time. You know, you go to the restroom, you come out, you make a bracha. You know, even something as mundane and simple as that, you know, you have to connect to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. It goes without saying, Shabbos, Kashrus, I can't eat anything that I want. I have to make a bracha before I eat. You know, so that consciousness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is something which is very, very Jewish. And, you know, perhaps it's that consciousness which is meant with L'Sakein Olam Malchus Shakai, that, you know, in the future, not only will the non-Jews recognize God, it's not just that they'll have a book club, you know, once a month where, you know, they read the Mesillas Yesharim, you know, once a month, and, you know, they feel once a month connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, there's going to be a certain sense of constancy. Whether they become Jewish or not, but they will have that sense of God's ever-presence, you know, that they'll have, you know, even at that future time. So that's what we're looking forward to. You know, where the ideals of the first part of Aleinu are ultimately recognized by the world as a whole. Altira is not part of Aleinu. It's actually mentioned first by the Shaloh HaKadosh of Yeshaya Horowitz, the author of the Shnei Luchos Habris. It was from Frankfurt, I think, the 1500s. And the idea there is based on a Gemara in Megillah that says that these three psukim were quoted by children right around the time that Haman sought to destroy the Jewish people. And Haman heard these children quoting these psukim, and he realized that the Jews were ultimately going to win. Don't be afraid from, you know, the purported Holocaust that the Rishonim are going to bring, you know, looking to bring upon the Jewish nation. Haman sought to destroy the entire Jewish nation. Don't be afraid. Yeah, you can make all your plans, but God is with us. You know, the plans are going to be thwarted. No matter how old I am, you know, I'm still with the Jewish people and protecting them and making sure that they won't get hurt. Essentially, these are three psukim that remind us that even with all the anti-Semitism in the world, we're going to come out ahead. So what's the connection of these three psukim to Aleinu? Again, they're not really part of Aleinu, but why would they be placed here? Because Aleinu is beautiful and highfalutin, and, you know, they're all, everyone in the world is going to come and recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, and until that time, they're painting swastikas on our shuls. Right? So, okay, what do we do until we get to our King Nekavalucho? What chizit do we give ourselves until we get to that point where the nations of the world recognize the truth of God and Torah? Al-Tira is a little reminder that God is going to protect the Jewish people until we get there. You know, we don't have to worry. A person may say, okay, Al-Kin Akavah, that's very nice. What if, God forbid, the Jewish people are annihilated between now and then? No, Al-Tira, Mitachat Tissam, you know, the anti-Semites of the world are not going to be able to crush us during this interim period. Okay, we should have a good week. Again, I appreciate your indulgence, and starting a little late, ending a little bit late, and we'll see one another next week, promptly at 10:15.